This is Frank Hilton. It's February the 18th, 1997. I'm interviewing John P. Gilgore on his remembrance of scouting in 1927 through 1930. John, you want to tell me a little about where you got started? And
yes, well, I moved from this place here in the north end of Brown County to Brownwood in 1926.
With your family?
With my family. The place where we are now and where I live was a place my father and my uncle bought about 100 years ago, just around the turn of the century.
Did they homestead it or?
No, they bought land. They some of this real good land. They pay as much as $10 or $12 an acre. Most of it was $2 or $3 an acre. But
this anyway, was good land.
It was good land. And so we did, but they, well, I had an older brother and a sister that was ready to go to college. So we moved to Brownwood.
How old were you then?
I was 12 years old. And when I had lived out here, and I'd went to a little three-room country school over here, and I was a star student there.
Now this is at Crosscut, is that the name of this community?
No, it was Blake.
This is Blake where we are now, or where you went to school.
Blake, I guess, really doesn't exist anymore. The school was consolidated with Williams later on. But when I was here, there was a little three-room school called Blake. And I lived out here, but I had, you know, 1,000 acres of my own land to roam over. I had a nice little black blaze-faced pony and a real neat pit bulldog. And the three of us roamed this country when I wasn't doing something else. And I don't remember hardly when I first started to learn to swim. And the three of us, count, I'll say the three of us, the dog and the horse and I, would find any deeper ponds and we would spend hours swimming. They all three of us loved to swim. And we would swim, and then a lot of other things we'd do. But in 1926, up moved to Brownwood. And I was most unhappy, really. I was fenced in. Those town boys didn't seem to like me. And
did y'all live near Willis Creek when you were in town?
Yes, fairly. I live on Cardin Avenue.
Okay.
And 1908, Cardin Avenue. And I didn't think they were very good to me, but I just didn't understand how to get along. And consequently, my school work suffered, and I got into a lot of fights and things like that. But it looked bad, and I don't really remember who it was that invited me, told me that there was a scout troop that we met down at the old Cumberland Presbyterian Church on Austin Avenue. It is there no more. And that church, they had it, and it was troop number 5. And there's a young fellow, red-headed boy, that went to Daniel Baker, and he also worked for the Brownwood Bulletin. And he was a scoutmaster, and he began to teach us scouting. It was there very few, I don't remember exactly how long, very few months until they organized the council. I don't believe it was called the Comanche Trail Council.
Called the Con Valley Council.
Con Valley Council, that is true. And Mr. Brumberg came in as a scout executive. And he was a veteran of World War I. He realized this was only 10 years after the close of World War I. And he was really military involved. He thought scouting, I think, or at least I felt like that he thought scouting was a military organization. And but scouting was really began to grow in Brownwood apparently at that time. Because in the organized troop out at Central Methodist Church, where I with my family were members, and we immediately started that troop. And
was this Troop 7?
Troop number 7. Mr. J.K. Wilkes was the... Mr. J.K. Wilkes was the scoutmaster, and he was learning scouting, and we all did. But the troop grew fast. I think it was just a few months till we had it full. And I got my second class, and I think maybe my first class just about as soon as our time allowed. And became a patrol leader. I was patrol leader of the Wolf Patrol. And then we had our first area-wide camp on the San Saba River down near San Saba. And I wouldn't know how to get there now, but Mr. Brumberg and his people that he was helping, I know there was a lot of World War I Army squad tents, or tents, and every troop had a tent. And they were pitched just so and lined up just so. And every morning when the reveille would blow on the bugle, we all piled out and we had to do our beds just exactly so, put our mess kit under the pillow, and everything just exactly military style. And then in a certain number of minutes, well, here was some man that would come to our tent, and we would all line up at attention out in front of the tent for inspection. Inspect us and our ears and our clothes and everything. And when we got through with that, then we were to run about 2 miles, I think. Seemed to me like it was more than that. But we were running before breakfast every morning. And then we would come back and have our breakfast at the mess tent. And I know every meeting, when they'd call a meeting, well, all the troops were lined up by troops, stand at attention, check. A lot of times there'd be inspection to be sure our uniforms were just right and nothing out of line. And that was my first Boy Scout big camp.
Y'all stayed there, what, about a week?
I believe it was a week.
Do you know what some of the activities y'all did at camp, such as did y'all do archery or any fire building?
I think there was some. There was some fire building, and we had some Indian people from New Mexico that talked about two or three different nights on Indian lore. And I don't remember their names or anything, but we called him Chief. But give us talks about the Indian people, and that's where I first learned about it. Of course, later I lived in New Mexico for 20 years, and I learned a lot more about it. But I don't remember the name, but I was thinking we missed a year having summer camp, and I'm not sure. And then the next summer camp that I recollect going to was down on Billy Gibbons Ranch. And we went down and they had put up a temporary mess hall, and we had tents, and we camped was on the south side of San Saba River, and I guess it was right across from where the camp is now.
The camp's about 3 miles up the river now from where it used to be.
Is that right? Well, yeah. Anyway, from where it moved to next, and I was not familiar with what happened after that. But at that time, I had, and I just don't exactly remember if I had passed my Eagle Scout test, if I was an Eagle Scout at that time. Perhaps not, but I was a star or life scout working on merit badges, so I guess I wasn't an Eagle.
There was a Chief Herman Lehman from Mason who had been captured by the Indians. Was he involved in that camp?
He sure could have been. I do not remember.
There is another guy from New Mexico. I was trying to find his name in this and will eventually.
Yeah.
But because he was down at Camp Fawcett when they had it.
Well, I know.
Chief Red Eagle of Wild West, New Mexico.
Chief Red Eagle. Now, that is right. That rings a bell. And he was the one that would give us stories about Indian dances.
He had a cow hat teepee that he put together.
Yeah, I believe he did.
Yeah, and he would teach Indian. Well, he would come from Roswell, New Mexico, and he'd stay at each scout camp for about a week and just move around from one camp to the other.
Well, I didn't know about all that.
Yeah.
But he fascinated me because I'd never seen an Indian before. But that fascinated me. And now, Chief Red Eagle. Now, that rang a bell.
I figured it would. I could just find his name.
But that was...
There was another guy that used to go around help with camps. Do you recognize that picture?
Oh,
he'd bring three or four Eagle Scouts from Lubbock, Texas, and they'd go around all over the Texas running scout camp, helping with scout camps.
Well, this was 1929.
Mm-hmm. But he would do it. He did it for several years.
Yeah, I do not remember.
You not recognize him?
There was three or four men that worked with Brumberg. And they would help. I really thought they were military people.
When was the camp held? Was it held early in the summer or late in the summer? Do you remember?
I'm not sure, but it was in the summer. I really do not know.
I have some photographs of some of the early camps that were held down around San Saba before they went to Camp Billy Gibbons.
Yes.
And I'm going to set another time to come out here and show you the pictures and see if you recognize anything or anybody in them.
I might do it. But this was in... I think in 1928
was when you went to camp the first time.
I think so.
You were a first class scout by then.
That's right.
So it would probably be 1928.
That's right. I was a first class scout, and our Troop 7 was going pretty good. And I think my dad helped furnish transportation.
Y'all remember how you went down there? Did you go in the back of a big truck with all the gear? Or?
No, I think we went in cars. I don't know if all of them did.
No.
But I think we went in a car because I think my father, who was troop commissioner, one of the commissioners, and I remember his driving. We had an old Hudson.
What year Hudson do you remember?
I think it's 1928
Hudson? Okay.
Yes. I think
new car.
Huh?
It was a new car.
It was a new car.
And it was dirt roads all the way down.
Absolutely. And we wound through. Seemed to me like we had to open a bunch of gates, but
yeah.
I was so excited, and it was such a thing to me that I mean my detail may not be too good on that.
That's all right. Same way when I remember my first scout camp.
But it was really something. And then, but from the time we went to the Camp Billy Gibbons, well, I was seasoned in. And
that was right after you got your Eagle. That would have been about 1930.
I think that's about right. And
so you went the first year they had Camp Billy, Camp
that's
at
right.
Camp went.
That's right, and I helped set, in fact, I went a day or two early with some of the older scouts and helped set up some of the facilities there. I went a day or two days early.
Did they call the group the Bull Gang by any chance?
That's right. I'd forgotten that, too. I was a member of the Bull Gang. And they helped set up camp down there, and I know one of the highlights of that camp was that Billy Gibbons invited us over to his house, a lot of us. I don't know if the whole camp went, but there were several of us, and we got over there, and it came one ferocious rain, and the Sensabler River got up
and we couldn't get back across to camp.
And finally, some of us, I think I was one of them, that dived into the water and swam across the flood. And it wasn't long before the river ran down, but it was way up, I think maybe the next morning before a lot of them got back to camp. But that was one of the things I remember about our first camp, Billy Gibbon.
That happened several times from what I understand.
It could have.
What did you remember about Camp Billy Gibbons? It was on 25 acres of land, so it wasn't a real big place.
I do not. I know we did some minor hiking around. And,
you remember any ceremonies or Indian ceremonies or anything that they had, or they inducted people in the?
I don't remember any Indian ceremonies at that camp. Now there could have been some, but it was, I guess, a little bit unorganized. I remember one of the, they were, most of the scouts themselves put on the programs. And I know there'd be one evening where we had the rocks all lined around with the big campfire deal in the middle of it. And one of the scouts, I know one thing, that we had a liar's contest, and I remember winning that. You have to get started early in the world.
Did you pass the merit badges at camp?
A lot of them. I start at camp, and some of them I passed. Now, one of my earlier merit badges, before I became a star, I'm trying to remember his name. He was a fireman in Brownwood. It is not, I remember, but he had been a fireman for a lot of years, and he had a broken neck, and his head set at an odd angle, because apparently at some fire back through the years when he used team altogether, horses.
Yeah.
And horses, something happened and the breast yoke hit him in the neck and broke his neck. But he just had his head at an odd angle. But he would complain bitterly, I remember, about he just could hardly ever get to a fire with all these modern fire engines. If he had those horses, he'd get to a fire at half the time. And he would tell us how that worked, and he worked with me on the firemanship merit badge. I remember that one. And of course, swimming, that was no item for me, because there was never, so far back as I can remember, I could swim like a duck. And, in fact, this creek where this lake is, I remember one time it came down in a big flood. I mean, it drains over 100 square miles of land.
Mm.
And that came down, a big flood, nobody got across, and my uncle and two younger cousins lived right across over here on the other side of the creek. And I wanted to get over there, and I wanted to ride on the horse, and it was deep, and I knew that horse could handle it, and just waded off in there, and directly we got out, and that's the horse was swimming, and she swam a long way down the river to the creek before she got out on the other side. But anyway, swimming was one of my earlier merit badges, and I forgot what that like in. I guess I can.
What was scouting like in Brownwood? Were there several, more than one troop? You mentioned?
Yes.
Did y'all ever get together as a group?
Oh, yes. We had some.
What did y'all do when you got together?
Well, we'd have some programs. Now, this was a little later on. It was just about right after I got my Eagle Scout. We had a ceremony where we put the arch, I believe they call it the Arch of Scouting.
Mm-hmm.
We built it down at this old scout office in the basement of the courthouse. And we had, it was electrical, it was boxes. And on each box, there would be a scout law. trustworthy lawyer, helpful, friendly, all those. And we'd meet, and the boys would, each boy would be assigned a law, for instance. And he'd take that and put it in there and give a scout law and some little something that they had written up about it until you got the base of it, built scout laws. Then the scout oath, I remember right, was there. And then they had the keystone. I think it was In God We Trust. I'm not sure for sure about that. But I just wondered if you have any records of that, because we carried that, we carried it Goldthwait and a lot of other places and put on that program. And we, it was scouts from all the troops. Troop number one, I believe, was the First Baptist Church, and Mr. Weinbrenner was scoutmaster, and he was a wonderful fellow.
Yeah, he got the first Silver Beaver in the council. He was a professor out at
Howard
out of Payne. Yeah. I've got some pictures of him and has his old Boy Scout hat.
Yeah, I remember. I can picture him.
Yeah, we still have his hat and all.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was given. Neil Pepper had it.
He was a wonderful fellow. So, and I'm just trying to think of some of the other scoutmasters, but he's the one that stands out. And there was, we still had a Troop 5 for a while. I don't know if they kept it or not, but I think we had about 7 or 8 troops. I'm not absolutely sure how many, but there was a troop there, and there was a, I think the, most of the churches had scout troops. I think the First Methodist Church, which was down across from where the First Baptist Church is now.
Where'd y'all go camping? When you go out for weekend camping or hiking or whatever?
We at various places. One place we used to go, and this was in the early 30s, was down at Lakewood. Swimming pool. Did you ever, have any occasion to know?
No.
It was a hot water, hot well, hot water come up out of the ground in about a 4-inch stream and fill this pool, and it was a huge concrete swimming pool.
Where was it?
It was 5 miles south of Brownwood, right out Austin Avenue, it's about a three quarters of a mile from where you cross up highway when you're going out Austin Avenue.
Mm-hmm. That loop road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was down
in that bottom there?
Yeah. Right. Well, it was just under the brow of the hill. Under the brow of the hill.
That's all houses now.
I imagine it is. But of course, that, in those days, that was out in the country. In fact, it was a pretty good little hike from Brownwood out there. There wasn't, in fact, there was, I don't think there were any houses past Willis Creek at that time, and very few out that far. At that time, we had, then there was another hot water swimming pool called Hot Wells, and it was east, or back, kind of east of Austin Avenue, right out on the town side of Willis Creek. And then we go to Willis Creek, out Willis Creek out there, and there was a place out there where we would, but we always, nearly all of our overnight camps, we hiked to them. And I'm just trying to think of several other places. Now, after about 1929 or 30, they built Lake Brownwood. And we would go out to different places around Lake Brownwood. In fact, we went out, used to camp out not far from the dam. And I know several of us, and I'd shudder to think if any of my kids did this again. But we'd jump in the lake and swim to that island. And then we'd play around over there, and then we'd swim back. And several of us got together from different troops and built a sailboat. Some of the boys had instructions or knew more about it, and we built a Boy Scout sailboat. and we had sailed out on Lake Brownwood. When it was rotten new lake, there wasn't any houses around it or anything then. But that was when it first started. After that, we camped down on Pecan Bayou some too. There was a place down there, oh, 2 or 3 miles south of Brownwood, downtown Brownwood. We'd hike down the railroad track and go down there, and then we'd take off to the right for a little ways, and there was a nice camping area, and we used to camp down there some. I'm just trying to remember any other camping places, but of course all the unless it was a summer camp way off somewhere, it was always a hike. But later on they got pretty ambitious, and they would carry our bedding and stuff out in a car or truck. But that was later on. But a lot of us, and then I had saved enough money up when I went to Brownwood. I bought a bicycle. I'd never been on a bicycle, but I learned to ride that, and I became rather proficient at it. In fact, about right after I joined the Boy Scouts, well, our scoutmaster, Bill Logan, was in charge of the paper boys, throwing the papers in town, and I got a paper route, which I kept for several years, because I was good on that bicycle. And then, of course, my bicycle and merit badge, that was no problem to me. I know we had a 50-mile trip, I believe, to make. There's a fellow boy that lived second door, probably, and that's from Melton. We'd get up one morning, and in fact, I'd be there several times later, and my dad had a ranch. This was after about 1930-31. Had a ranch down south Goldthwait, Seabar Ranch, about a 10,000-acre ranch. And we'd ride from Brownwood down there, about 50 miles. We'd get up real early and get away before daylight, and we'd be there well before noon. And that's the way I ride a bicycle. I had no, it was no even any idea of a problem to me at all to get a bicycle and ride up to Rising Star. I had cousins living up in there or anything, and I just ride that bicycle and take off like I would have nowadays they do in an automobile.
I'm gonna show you a list of Eagle Scouts around the time that you got yours. See if you recognize any of the people or
Eddie
what
Oates,
they did.
I remember him real well. Also Daugherty, remember him real well. Tommy Foley, I remember him.
What do you remember about Eddie Oates?
Eddie Oates?
Yeah, what do you remember about him?
I'm just trying to, it's Levy Oates.
Levy?
Levy Oates. Levy Oates.
Was he in the same grade you were, or older?
I'm trying to get pull back some memories here, but I knew him real well.
What troop does it show him to be in?
Troop 2. And Dory was in Troop 5. Yeah, and now Tom Foley, he was in
one of them was in Cisco, yeah.
Edward Brewer, and Manson Melton. He was my friend that I got into scouting.
Do you know where any of those people are today, or what they're doing, or what happened to them?
No, I sure don't. I know Manson Melton is dead. He went to California, and during the war, he served in the Army as a cook. And that's the last I ever heard of him, except that some mutual friend of ours knew that he was dead. And Jeff Thomas Wilkes, his father, was our scoutmaster. And he was a good friend of mine. And,
Who was that?
Jeff Thomas Wilkes. And he had a younger brother named Bobby Wilkes that came in for scouts in Troop 7. And then later on, he had another brother named Bobby. But anyway, Jeff Thomas and I got our Eagle Scout up at the same time. And Manson Belton and I, the three of us. Remember that. I remember Charles Buchan, was this from Rising Star? I knew several boys. Rising Star. Not real well, but I knew him.
What do you remember best about your scouting days? Was it, if you had to put your finger on it, what do you remember?
There's so many things.
Apparently it helped you as a boy to get you out of trouble.
Yeah, that's the first thing. I know I was a problem to the school and the town. In fact, they scouting really got me straightened out as far as getting along with people and getting to be a member of a community, because the Boy Scouts I could get along with. And I know I was small, but I was wiry and I was strong, and I didn't back off from anybody. I had way too many fist fights in my day. I remember that.
And when you graduated from high school, were you in scouting when you graduated from high school?
Yes. And I was in scouting until I went to Lubbock. I was in scouting 2 years after when I was in Daniel Baker. But I was serving as a scoutmaster, or at least I was in charge of the troops. I was taking them on camps, overnight hikes, and weekend camps and stuff. I was doing that kind of work. And we went to Camp Billy Gibbons. I guess this was 1934, and I had been on the track team for downtown. I'd been on the track team for Daniel Baker, and we had this Lone Star Conference meet down at Austin, University of Texas. And I got third place in the 2 mile run. Mm-hmm. I started out trying to run the 100-yard dash way too slow, and I kept coming up, and I was too slow, and I finally got to two miles, and I never did in those days know what fatigue meant. I could swim for hours, never get tired, and I could run that way.
Did you ever serve on the camp staff while you were at Camp Billy Gibbons? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I served on the bull gang. I remember in 34 I went to camp, because I had right after my trip to Austin, I had my appendix out, and I'd had been about 3 weeks or four, like 3 weeks I guess, and I went to camp, and I won first place in two or three swimming events.
Gee.
That hurt a little bit, but then I could. The doctor, the college doctor we had, was Dr. Ned Snyder. You didn't know him because he died in 1935. But Dr. Ned Snyder was the camp doctor, and he's the one, Daniel Baker doctor, he's the one that took my appendix out. And he was back in the days when most of them take the appendix out, they'd put them right in bed and not let them move for several days or two or three or a week maybe, and then get up and have adhesions. But he came in the first day I'd had an operation, and he he worked with scouting a lot. Dr. Ned Snyder did, and young Ned Snyder, who I guess is still alive in Brownwood, he was a doctor. And he and I palled together a lot.
The young Ned Snyder?
Yeah, no, there's still another younger than that, I think.
Oh.
But this, he'd be my age, but he's retired several years ago. Dr. Ned Snyder, the one that is retired just a few years ago, was 2 or 3 years younger than I. But Dr. Snyder took my appendix out, and the next morning when I kind of late that afternoon, next morning he came in, and I never remember asking myself, Doctor, I need to go to the bathroom. He said, well, it's right across the aisle, right across the hall, get up and go.
And I asked Papa, he said, yeah, get up. So I did.
And that was before any other doctors in the country would ever allow their patients to get out of bed. But now, of course, that's common. But Dr. Ned was, he was a wonderful doctor.
What was Brownwood like when you were a kid living there?
From my point of view, it was...
Had many paved streets or mostly dirt?
Well, they had several paved streets. When we moved there in 1926, Austin Avenue was paved and Coggin Avenue was paved. And just not like it is now, but it was paved.
Two lanes or one?
Yeah, two small lanes. And there were several, of course, downtown streets were paved.
Brick or asphalt or wood or what?
Asphalt. They were all paved with asphalt. I don't think we even had any brick streets there then. And the underpasses, Vine Street and Austin Avenue underpass, were they were still kind of a phenomenon to me.
Modern day, huh?
That's modern day, and they. And I think, I may be changed now, but in going through the Austin Avenue underpass, there's an old sign that's been built back out of the old sign that says speed limit 6 miles an hour.
Were there any theaters in town?
Oh, yes.
Did you go to the theater?
Oh, yes. In fact, the first year I was a Boy Scout, there was a little theater. I forgot the name of it. It was on Fisk. But they would they gave all the Boy Scouts a free pass to that theater, and there was a serial show that they showed every Saturday called Scouty. This was about a scout, and then of course we would go over and just take our dimes, go after that every Saturday, keep up with what Scouty was doing. And then for the people who had, you know, like quarters or so of big money, there was the Lyric Theater over there on the corner of what street is across from where?
Fisk or Baker or?
No, it's on Main, it's on the, not Main, Center. Across from where that men's clothing store used to be. And it's, I think it's a dry goods store or something now. But that was a fine big theater. That was the big one. Then there was one across the street from it. But, you know, those, in the days I was in Brownwood, we did have some radio. In fact, when I was, well, I guess about 1930-31 somewhere, they put a radio station in Brownwood, a little radio station. And I, as a Boy Scout, got the chance to see it, go down and see that radio station. And I had some friends, in fact, my cousin married one of the girls that sang the Blue Bonnet Girls, they called it. And they didn't have canned, they didn't play records or anything like that.
It was all live, wasn't it?
It was all live. And I remember that about Brownwood.
What do you remember about the schools? Were you down there at what they used to call Central 6 there on Austin Avenue by the underpass? Was that the school you went to?
Well, the school I went to high school.
Okay.
I was high school then. I went through high school there and I was on the debating team. like we won several debating contests through there. And then when I got to college, Daniel Baker, another young fellow, and I decided we wanted to debate. And we set up and we went to Abilene to a debating tournament and almost won it. And there's nothing but young lawyers and high-powered people. We didn't have any coach or anything. But anyway, that was one thing. Now, something about scouting I remember very well. The first time that they put in stop signs at the main, a lot of the main streets, they never had any kind of signs like that. And these were rubber signs that they put in the middle of the street and nailed them down some way. And they never could get people to it, so they got the Boy Scouts of Brownwood to patrol on weekends the stop signs at these intersections. And we gave them whistles and so forth. So, and most people, when you'd whistle, it'd stop, and we would explain to them the stop sign and that the people wanted you to stop those stop signs. And that was news to a lot of people then. And there's a lot of other things. I know.
Any parades?
Not too many parades. I don't ever remember really being in a...
Do you remember there being a Boy Scout band or anything like that in your scouting career?
No.
Did y'all have citywide courts of honors when you got your awards? Where were they held?
Oh, yes. We held citywide courts of honor.
Where were they held?
They had different places. I know one time they held it at the Central Methodist Church, but let's see, I got my Eagle Scout. Let's see where that award was. I believe it was at the old Memorial Hall, Soldier and Sailor Memorial Hall. It's where I got my Eagle Scout award. But at different places, there wasn't any set place for a court of honor. But they were for the city, the whole city, all the scouts in the city. And we had a lot of...
You had 100 of them, 100 kids there, or was it a small group?
I'd say 100. You're probably close to what there would be. Some of the better attended ones would be close to 100 scouts there, because we had five or six troops. I don't know exactly how many troops, but they all went there. And then after the Depression came on, of course that put a little bit of crimp in scouting. However, we carried on, but new scouts, very few of them could afford to buy uniforms. But some of us had uniforms.
Were y'all still wearing the World War I style uniform with the leggings, or were they more modern?
They're more modern. The first one, and when I first joined, there were some of those that had the leggings. But I believe, I think that we had the...
Regular khaki pants.
Khaki pants, that's right.
And, what were some of the foods y'all used to eat on campouts?
Well, some of them was rather...
unedible?
Well, it would be now. But I was always, one of my long shots was cooking. I love to cook. And one thing I'd always take for my breakfast and cook for, and I generally have a lot of help at breakfast time, would be Aunt Jemima whole wheat pancakes. And I'd make flapjacks, you know, and see how high you can throw them and hopefully catch them, things like that. And another thing we learned, we did in our troop, I don't know if it is, but when we go on a trip, we would all take eggs that we could fry. And we found out we'd break those eggs, put them in a fruit jar, and there was no trouble. We never had any trouble. I always carried my eggs in a fruit jar, broken, you know.
What did y'all do for supper, for your main meal, or was it lunch?
Well, usually we'd go out Friday night, and generally come in Saturday. And my group, and I think most of them as far as that goes, there wasn't any such thing as being out on Sunday or even Saturday night. We had to be in, go to church on Sunday. And we would go out Friday night and, at different times, now there were times when some of the people would come out and cook us hamburgers or something and feed us. But most of the time, well, we would build up little individual fires, generally by patrols, and we generally organize our camps and everything else by patrols. And we would organize them and we'd cook our meals together as a patrol. And I know we're talking about eggs, we'd take those eggs out. So some of us got to, in those eggs, and instead of frying or cooking, we just stir them up and eat them. And I was patrol leader of the Wolf Patrol, and I know most of the years we were known as the egg-sucking wolves.
That was one of the things.
Stopped at mostly what the boys would.
Did y'all put up tents when you go camping or just sleep out in the open?
Sleep out in the open 90% of the time. We didn't take tents. I don't remember a troop camp where we had tents. In fact, I'm not sure our troop had a tent. But we would sleep in the open. Then we would learn to make our one thing that we learned in scouting was to make a sleeping bag. Of course, there wasn't no such thing as sleeping bags, but we'd take our blankets and sheets. We'd put a blanket down, then put two sheets and another blanket, and then fold that over and fold it over and fasten it and turn it back. Slide in it, and that's where you slept most of the time, and we'd take. And we always carried our bedrolls over our necks. And when I was a patrol leader, and even after I was junior assistant scoutmaster, well, we did a lot of overnight camping out on Willis Creek, out north of, it wasn't the highway then, but out up Willis Creek up there. There was some beautiful holes for water. And we had a place people, I guess it was camp, I never remember anybody running us off. But, and I guess this goes back to my early scouting when Bromberg had it. Until we got out of the city limits of Brownwood, which then was started the Central Methodist Church, and until we got out, we line up, it was a whole troop line up by patrols. My patrol would line up, get in step, and hup, one, two, three. And we were known all over Brownwood, you know, they'd hear us going up Coggin Avenue saying, hup, one, two, three. And but we'd roll our sleeping bag material up, put across our shoulders, put our haversack, we call them then, on our backs. And another thing we had in scouting then, I don't guess they've had it a long time, we used to all have a staff.
Scout stave? Yeah, scout walking stick?
Yeah, and we would all get them. There was some furniture stores in Brownwood, and in those days they would get their carpets rugs rolled on big bamboo sticks. Good heavy bamboos, and they would let scouts have them. And we'd put in our names, and when they'd get some, they'd let us know. And we nearly all had those bamboo staves. And we'd go camping. That was a integral part of our camping, was those staves. We could use them for a lot of things. But that was. I guess, I don't know, there's so many things, back to your original question, what I remember most about my scouting days. there's so many different things that it gave me a pride. I just thought, you know, scouting was the greatest thing that ever happened. And I was always, you know, as a patrol leader, I would have weekly patrol meetings, one day a week, and we lived on Cardin Avenue, and my dad always kept a cow, which I had to milk, and we had a little kind of a shed with two little rooms, one on either side with the milking shed in the middle, and in one of them, well, we generally have some maybe cow feed, cottonseed or something, and that's where I'd hold most of my patrol meetings. So I turned that cow shed. And we had a great time. And
you remember anything funny happened, or anything humorous or embarrassing to others, or whatever?
Well, some of them, but you couldn't put it in writing.
Yeah, I've heard some of those over the years, and you're right, I didn't put them in writing.
I remember at one camp, down at Camp Geronimo, down in Christopher, Texas, there was a kid sleeping with his mouth open, you know, snoring, yeah. And they took axle grease and put it in his mouth one night. And another time, the kids were in the cot, and they picked it up, took it out in the middle of the river, and set it down in the river. Yeah. So when he got up the next morning, he got up in the water.
All those kind of things happen on the scout camp. But I'll tell you about first scout camp. I remember that was my first scout camp, and I was probably, I guess I was the first class scout, I'm not sure. But I know that was, I mean, you told the line on that one. You everything was just exactly so. And there was no, you really learned a lot of how the military worked. And I think it was good. But I don't guess you get to hype that today.
No. Much as sometimes you need to. Anything else you can remember that's related to your youth in Brownwood, or were your friends all scouts?
Well, most of them were. I had one then, and I finally got him in the scouts, all right. I don't know if I've been looking for his name, but I didn't find it. But I thought I had him on the scouts. His name was Benny Halbert. And his sister brought him from Denver. His father was a drunkard. His mother had been dead. He never knew a mother. And he was raised and lived on the streets of Denver. I mean, that was his home. And she got him down there, and he was a Russian Jew, really. But he was the toughest and the meanest kid you ever saw in your life. But, and this was before I became a scout, that I started out at Cardin Ward School, and they had a lot of things like music, and I never was a musician, knew nothing about it, and some other subjects that I knew nothing about that we'd never had in our little school. So they failed me my first semester, and they had a room over at junior high then, what was right down the street from the Cardin Ward School, right behind the old high school. And so they had this room of us misfits, I guess you'd call, down there. And they'd have teachers that just starting out and so forth. And we weren't expected, I don't think, to know anything. But anyway, I was down there going to school. And as I said, I was always having some run-ins with boys that was picking on me. But I'll never forget this one time. There's some boys, they were giving me a pretty hard time, and I was fighting back. I'd been pretty good out on the school ground. And this little kid come up, he wasn't quite as big as I was, but I mean, he lit in, he cleaned them out. He was the best strapper I ever saw. He just knew how to handle his fist, and he was good. So we got to be buddies right off. And I did get him in scouts, but I don't remember. I never saw his, I didn't see his name.
He may have not registered. I may have come, but didn't get registered.
I don't know what happened on that, but I know Benny went scout with me some, and I got him to go into Sunday school with me.
Were you a member of Central United Methodist?
That's right. I started there in 1926, and I was a member there until 1935 and went to Lubbock.
What happened after Lubbock, after you graduated? Where did you get your degree in?
I got my degree in dairy manufacturing. I mean, a lot of things I learned in scouting that helped me in college after I got out there. But this was in the very depth of the Depression, when probably 40 or 50% of people were out of work, and a lot of people working for a dollar a day if they had a job and glad to get it. Well, but I had a next door neighbor that Mr. Harvey Bird, and you may remember his wife, he passed away 2 or 3 years ago. He was in masonry and lived in Waco, and he was a secretary for the Texas Masonic Freemason Order. But he lived next door to us, and he had been to Tech, and he thought that, he said that if people were able to get jobs as county agents or this type of thing, vocational ag teachers were starting out, and that if I thought to go out there, I could probably get me a job. But of course, I'd been going Daniel Baker, and it was a wonderful old college, but nobody getting work after we got out of it. So I went to Lubbock, and my dad took me out there, and we found through the papers, we found a little dairy off about 2.5 miles west of the campus. And the campus at that time in Lubbock was in the country. And this is out of dirt road out there, and I got a job milking cows, room and board. Milk about 20 cows, 20 to 25 head of cows twice a day for my room and board. Wasn't very much, mostly beans. And
this is why you were going to school?
Going to school. I was in college. And I was going to get into school. I got into school of agriculture, and I thought I'd be a vocational ag teacher or a county agent. And after the first year, well, I was doing that, and the professor out there was a dairy manufacturing professor named K.M. Runner, and he was just like a daddy to me. And he had told me that he knew I was having a pretty hard time out there, and having to walk in school and milking all those cows, and didn't have a decent place to sleep or anything. So he thought that he could help me some, and he gave me a job building a fence around his house, which was over on 20th Street then, which was just about the end of Lubbock. And I built that fence, and he paid me about $1 or $2 a day, which was pretty good. So then he got talking to me about switching to dairy manufacturing, because he had the only department, there probably wasn't over 20 boys in that department for dairy manufacturing, but he had never graduated a boy that didn't have a job when he got out of school. And that was the only department that those days that could even get close to that. So I decided the thing to do is change. So I changed to dairy manufacturing. And then that summer I came back to Brownwood. My folks lived in Brownwood. Got a job working at the filling station, making $1 a day. Worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for $1. So I was glad to get it, and I worked for 90 days. And I had $90. My dad, I told him about having to walk about 2.5 miles in that West Texas sandstorms to school, and I felt like I'd like to see if I could get me a car. So he helped me, and for $125, we found one down at Weatherby Motor Company, a Chevrolet, 29 model Chevrolet, that I could get for $125, and he helped me, and we bought that car. So I took it back out there, and I hadn't only been out there three or four weeks, and I got a card from the dad. He never wrote letters, he wrote cards, and he had told me that when he lost his ranch at the early part of the Depression down south of Goldthwaite, where he had a ranch foreman named Brooks, Jay Brooks, and he said Jay had this, that he had given Jay a cow, little Jersey first cow, she was a neat little cow, and she was pregnant, going to have a calf, but if I could sell her and make any money from it, well, I could have the cow, because Brooks had promised to buy the cow when he made his first crop, and he had made a crop, and he wouldn't pay but $15 for that cow and calf. So my dad thought I could do better than that, since I was working around dairies. And I had this Chevrolet. I borrowed a homemade trailer, and I got a homemade trailer hitch bolted onto the back bumper. And I remember so well, I had about 78 cents. And I had about a half, fourth of a